Good morning. We are doing very well. Calming down with medals.
We're like the Department of Finance over here in a giveaway budget. It's just all good news coming at the moment. So we have 5 medals now guaranteed in these games. We're currently joined 14th in the medal table, 2 gold and 2 bronze. And that doesn't include at least one more to come because Kelly Harrington, of course, is guaranteed at least the bronze. But
oh, Desmond, what a week it has been. Every day a medal. Where to begin? Well, let us start on Monday and get into the water with this woman.
Give me an M, give me an O, give me an N, give me an A, give me a Mona!
She's dreamed of this since a little girl. She's just our hero.
It's all the friends and the family and the community that I meet and make along the way and that I get to share these moments with that are the most important.
Many a hard morning, frost and snow, she went swimming. All here in Grange is so proud.
What's really special about what Mona achieved was she started swimming in a 25-metre pool.
She's dreamed of this since a little girl. She's just our hero.
Max Sherry, the second fastest qualifier, goes in lane number 5. She's had it, looks like what is a slow start.
I dove in and, you know, my goggles filled up with water and I was like, crap! I've got to push. I've really got to dig deep.
Can McSherry take something here? She's taken the bronze medal. A bronze medal for Ireland in 65.59 seconds.
Do I really belong at the top? And, you know, this proves it.
It has taken years of sacrifice, and we're so privileged here in Marlins to have been on that journey with her.
Mona McSherry. From Grange and Sligo, the hat's off to you, girl.
I think there was a moment on the podium where I just started tearing up, and that's when it was like, oh shit, this is really happening.
Bronze medalist, Mona McSherry.
Mona McSherry, bronze, the 100 metres breaststroke. She was fantastic. And she joined Catherine Thomas in for Ray. And she was feeling a little bit emotional after it all. Who could blame her? Yes, there was the medal, but also that medley.
That was just a reminder, I suppose, of how big it is. You've made history. Can I ask you, how did you feel standing up there on the podium? It was so emotional for you.
Yeah, I'm getting emotional again just listening to that over again, but just unbelievable. I mean, I've been on the podium before for Ireland, but I think that being on an Olympic podium is really the pinnacle of sport. Mm-hmm. And to watch the flag raise, I was just overwhelmed with happiness and like had flashbacks of all the great times and all the harder times over the past number of years, and just seeing all that hard work pay off. You know, it's so hard to describe the moment, but I can, like, thinking back now, I can remember feeling it, and it's unbelievable. Like, tears are flowing down my face, and I'm just trying to really just soak it all in as much as possible.
And the Sligo Olympian remembered tougher times training, but also falling out of love with swimming, all of which, in their own way, came back to her now.
It became too negative almost, and I just wasn't really enjoying it anymore. 99% of what very few people see is like the training and the days and the months and the years that go into like these split snapshot performances that you see. And so, you know, if you're not enjoying the 99% of the time and like enjoying getting better and going to training every day and the people you're surrounded by, and like if you can't find joy in that, then it's, I mean, I just got to a point where I was like, it's not really worth it, even if I am swimming fast. And I just got to a point where I was swimming more out of fear for being slow than anything else. And thankfully, I came to a better place with it. And I view swimming differently now. And I've just been able to enjoy it much more and like really just view these medals or racing, even racing at the Olympics, like getting the opportunity to do things like that is really just a privilege and a bonus on top of all the other stuff that we get to do day in and day out, you know, that is just encompassed of being a top class athlete.
And when it came to her goggles filling with water at that race, she is remarkably blasé.
These things happen to everyone, and it's not something that, like, I'm going to dwell on or anything, but it just, like, I think it's just such an important message that for anyone really competing in anything, because we're all going to experience those kind of things, and, like, you can just keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, you prepare for the moments like that as well. And, yeah, I'll probably just pull out a different new pair of goggles and maybe bless them, light a candle and hope they do better.
Hope for the best.
Amazing. Next up, this man.
And Whiffen. What a great
name. What a name.
Yeah.
What a name.
I feel like Whiffen is a kind of a word that sounds like it's good in water. Like, boats going slow, let's put out the Whiffen. You know, the Whiffen will make it go faster.
Colm O'Regan, not wrong. Because on Tuesday, Daniel Whiffen won gold in the 800 metres freestyle. This is how it went down. John Kenny at the mic.
Daniel Whiffen of Ireland, the 23-year-old from Loughborough University in Larne, in a small little town in Armagh, is in second place to Giorgio Paltrinieri, but he goes for gold. 25 metres to swim for Daniel Whiffen, but here comes Fink in lane two, past Paltrinieri. Has he got enough to get up and retain his title? I don't think so. It's going to be a gold medal for Ireland. In lane number four, Daniel Whiffen strikes gold and wins. It's a new Olympic record as well. Pat Callaghan in 19.
I mean, amazing. I mean, what's my name? Sorry, Daniel Whiffen, Olympic champion. Oh, mate, sorry. It's really good. I can't believe it. But to be fair, I can't thank anybody else other than my brother Nathan and my parents and my whole coaching staff at Loughborough and the Irish team. I couldn't do it without anybody, and it's definitely not, I'm not alone out there. That was such a good effort.
Tell us about the race. It was an incredible race. We knew from a long way out that you had a medal, just not sure what colour. Tell us about what was going through your mind in those closing stages.
I'm not going to lie, I'm not sure you can see me looking, but I was looking for Bobby Fink the whole time. I was like, I didn't get caught last 50. I've been practicing my whole year for this. I will not get caught last 50. So I was just looking over, and I saw that I got a body up, and I was like, oh, this is over, I've won.
An Olympic record as well.
Yeah, I know, pretty crazy. I mean, it wasn't that fast of an Olympic record, but I know another one tied to the books. I think I've won everything so far. I've won double world champ, European champ, and now the Olympics. And now I can say that I'm probably one of the best ever, so it's just even better.
With a gold around his neck, Daniel Whiffen with Paul O'Flynn. And also on Morning Ireland, Keane spoke to the proudest of parents, Rachel and Jonathan.
At that 400 metre mark then, what was it like as a parent watching your son?
Well, I just turned round to Jonathan and said, is this okay? And Jonathan sort of said, I don't know. So anyway, and then the end, I actually didn't realise how close it was until this morning when I've just watched a little clip back of the race, because we were so high up in the stadium. So we couldn't really see, if you know what
well,
I mean.
Well, you couldn't really see. I believe you lost your contact lens towards the
yes,
end of the race.
Yes, I did. It was literally at the end. All of a sudden, I don't know what happened. It was just as we cheered when we knew he'd won. The next thing is I couldn't see and my contact lens had fallen out.
I'm still reeling from it. You know, we've had high emotions last night. We were with some of the Team Ireland staff. Celebrating afterwards, coming back here, and then sort of, you know, looking at our phones with the hundreds of messages as we're sort of, you know, looking at friends that we've not spoken to for a number of years, sort of contacting us, and all the media that we've not even looked at yet. It's just phenomenal.
Look, it's been a whirlwind, but what's been the best moment over the last number of hours since the race?
I think the best moment for me, I think, was when Nathan came over and sort of, you know, and I gave him a hug, because he's been with Daniel all the way, and it was just lovely.
Oh, and there was a lot made of the twin telepathy possibly at work in the arena. Claire McNamara spoke to Nathan Whiffen.
A bit stressful at the start, but, you know, when he got to that last 100, I was like, I was already celebrating and I knew he'd have it. And I was just talking to him through the whole race, just saying that you've got this.
There's just no way the gold medal was getting away from him.
No, he definitely wanted that. You could tell when he walked out that he wanted it. He wrote his name in the history books in a celebration, and then he knew he was going to win it.
What was your reaction in that moment?
Oh,
I've nearly lost my voice, and I was just screaming, and there were so many Irish fans around me, and we were all cheering.
And as he came out of the pool, the first thing he said, the first person he mentioned was you, gave you a big special mention.
Yeah, I heard about this. I apparently was the only person he heard in the whole arena. It's pretty special to know that, twin telepathy.
Have you got twin telepathy?
Well, obviously we do, if you could hear me that loud of a crowd.
Nathan Whiffen. And by the way, home, Magherlin. And they were all claiming him.
It straddles the county border between Down and Armagh. Officially in Down, went to school in Armagh, and their GA club is St Michael's, which is affiliated to County Down, and they played football there at underage level. And Armagh GA and official Down GA online have been sending their congratulations. Armagh goes gold again. Patrick Healy was straight on saying, Magherlin is in County Down, just so you know. But we do have a definitive explanation of the county from Rachel and Jonathan Whiffen, the parents. Is it Down or Armagh?
Who can lay claim to you?
Absolutely, it's Armagh. There's no doubt in my mind.
That's it. They are orchard. They are orchard winners. That's the end of the discussion. It's nice.
Daniel Whiffen taking the gold on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, Kelly Harrington in the lightweight boxing, bronze in the back pocket at the very least. And at this stage, we'd expect no less.
Barry Lenihan, to see how people near Portland... Barry, how did it go down?
Sarah, they've just announced the result here in Gardner Street. Kelly Harrington, a double Olympic champion. Ladies, what do you make of that?
Amazing.
Sorry for the French though, Sarah.
Brilliant.
What does this mean for you? What does it mean?
Brilliant. For all the inner city people, she's done very, very well.
Kelly Harrington, everybody. Kelly Harrington.
Fantastic. Brilliant. She's an honour to the inner city.
She's just the fourth person in Irish history to win a two Olympics.
And you know what? She 100% deserves it.
Yeah, she is. The party's here. They're dancing around, as you can hear. Olé, olé, olé. There's a man up here on the chair. What do you make of that?
Fantastic, fantastic.
Did you ever doubt her?
Never, never. We never doubt Kelly. We never doubt her. I'll go my goal now. I'll go my goal.
We're going to have to hose down Portland Row and maybe even Barry if the medals get more precious, and they might. We'll have to see this evening. And on Morning Ireland, spare a thought for the family. Eastern correspondent Samantha Labrary spoke to Father Christy and early sparring partner, Brother Christopher.
She's now the first Irish woman to win in the Olympics twice, in two separate Olympics.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
That's great. That's for Kelly. That's not for us. That's for...
And what will that mean to her? What will it mean?
Everything. Everything. She's just, yeah. It's a happy, happy old. That's it.
Now, did Mammy Yvonne, did she watch?
No. And we didn't tell her for 10 minutes after the fight.
How did she not hear?
Because she was in the back of Kelly's house, and her nerves was gone, so she was saying Kelly was beaten because we didn't go in. And when we went into it, and she was, I thought she was beaten. So, yeah, we left her for 10 minutes.
Is she going to go all the way now?
We don't know. She's going to fight whoever's going to fight in the next fight, and we'll see how what happens, you know. She's capable of going all the way, you know. That's it. That's all.
And finally, what was the atmosphere like here on Portland Road? We were up in the Diamond Park there. It was electric. What was it like here?
It was a different type of feeling because we're all in our own individual houses, and it was only me and Chris were watching in our house, and it was just magic. And then it was magic just going to tell our ma. She'd done the business. And then she was, thanks be to Jays. I think she smoked 20 cigarettes in that 10 minutes.
I'm reading Kelly's autobiography at the moment, and I note in it that she said growing up with three brothers in the house is part of the reason she learned to fight the way she did. So how much credit are you taking for it?
I don't know, like, because I think that's why I became a decent runner, from running away from her. But no, yeah, it was always cat and mouse with me and Kelly because we're the two oldest, so... Yeah, no, I'm not taking any credit for anything she's achieved. No,
but even back then, was she able to beat you?
She was, yeah. We're out though.
Come on, Kelly. That was Wednesday. And on Thursday, well, we were almost blasé, square and feather us in the rowing. More medals, bronze for Philip Doyle and Darragh Lynch in the men's double sculls.
The Romanians out in lane number one, on course for Olympic glory. The Dutch are finishing strongly, but it's gold for Romania. It is silver for the Netherlands, and it is a brilliant bronze for Ireland, for Dara Lynch and Philip Doyle.
An incredible result. And just after they came off the water, they spoke to David Gillick. First up, Philip.
I know you're tired, physically, mentally, you gave it absolutely everything. Can you sum up what's going through your head right now?
Well, I made a massive mistake there at the end, so I have to apologise to everybody. I think we were coming for the Dutch big time, but we could smell them and sniff them. We knew these lads were on some other kind of planet over there on the left-hand side, but we went earlier, we pushed harder through the middle to get through. We knew people would have something else, so I think the mistake I made was a culmination of all the extra work I had to do in the middle, but I could feel his legs going, I could feel his calls. We went early in our sprint, and thankfully we had enough actually to make the mistake and keep going, but another day, but sure, look, we look back and see what we can improve for whatever's coming next. But fair play to this big lad here.
Dara, come over here. I know you're wrecked. But again, those calls, because it's an Olympic final, other crews did push a little bit early. Did you expect that, particularly the Dutch?
I think what the Romanians did, we expected, but we didn't think they were going to hold on. So like, we're kind of going toe-to-toe with the Dutch. We knew our sprints a lot better than the Americans. Obviously, there's doubts when it's, you think they might have a bit extra in an Olympic final, but we just stayed in our boat and pushed it on, tried to push early just to let them know that they weren't going to sniff. So.
And that sprint finish, you gave it absolutely everything. It was so close, but you were almost running out of water towards the end.
I was running out of mitochondria in my right arm there. But yeah, no, we had to go early, so we had to. We thought if we went to the Dutch, like Dad said, we would end up clearing the field, but the lads had a stormer, so you can't take anything away from them. But geez, first heavyweight medal ever. It's nice to write that into the history books and finally do what we've been saying all week. We try to be calm, confident, and a little bit under the radar, so it's nice to step out and get the podium for everyone at home, because I've never seen this many supporters at a race ever, so come to the next ones. But yeah, no, it's absolutely fine.
And indeed, supporters here, and there's a lot of supporters in Clonmel as well, so you have to say hello to them. But lads, I'm going to let you go to the podium, enjoy it.
And Rachel channeled the rest of us with this question to John Lavery. He is captain at Phillips Club, Belfast Boat Club.
We're just feeling majorly inadequate at the moment, listening to the stories of the kind of the sacrifice and the dedication. John, can you give us that sense of, I suppose, the sort of dedication that's needed for somebody to achieve something like this?
It's completely crazy. Philip went from something like 140 kilometres when he paired up with the national team to 200 kilometres a week. One session, 14 by 1500 metres. Took over 2 hours and 15 minutes. He was fitting this in while he was studying to be a doctor during 2018, 2019 time. And he then, this kind of program has been maintained, you know, so it's crazy stuff.
From the news at one, and yes, crazy and fabulous entirely for the rest of us sitting on the couch watching it. And when it came to the rowing, the crazy didn't stop. Yesterday, no exception, Skibbereen's finest. They pulled like a dog.
They're on the journey for home, Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan. The gold medalists in Tokyo 3 years ago are on course to defend their title. Stand by for another golden moment in Irish Olympic history. Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy together in Olympic dreams. The boys from Skibbereen are the Olympic champions 2024, and Paul O'Donovan is once, twice, three times a hero.
Yay.
They're unstoppable, untouchable, unbeatable.
Wow. Fantastic. Great commentary from Pádraig Lodge as well, and Eugene.
Wow, Des. Wow.
We needed that. We needed the sugar rush was starting to dip after our medals. That was unbelievable.
Now, obviously, fantastic stuff from Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy. Well done to them. Sorry, Des. Go on.
People who can't see it, the Clearwater victory means they won by a huge margin. It's a fantastic achievement, beating the Italians again.
The men's lightweight double sculls final gold for Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy. John Cook in for Clare spoke to Brian O'Connell, who was knee-deep in it in the Skibbereen Town Hall.
Ah, what an atmosphere, John. Incredible. I mean, I've never seen so many people crying at the same time in one room. Everybody sitting down at the start, as you can imagine, as the race progressed. Everybody on their feet here, really celebratory, jovial, carnival-type atmosphere here in the town hall in Skibbereen. And what a result. Relations, cousins, aunts of Paul O'Donovan, family members, friends, all gathered here, huddled in the town hall. I'd said earlier there wasn't standing room. There wasn't even standing room for a finish. People being turned away at the door. And everybody just hugely proud of their achievements and of what and of the significance. Someone said to me, and I haven't fact-checked this, but that 10% of all of Ireland's Olympic medals are now held by Skibbereen.
I'd well believe
it. Statistic.
And on yesterday's News at One, they pair themselves in Paris with Claire McNamara.
Fintan and Paul, gold medals around your necks again. You seem to really enjoy that.
Oh yeah, it was the crowd, if anything, like, it's all Irish people. There's so many Irish supporters. It's more than I expected, to be honest. It was out of this world. Yeah, class.
Big smiles, jumping for joy. Such a difference to Tokyo. You were wearing masks. There were empty stands. This is really special.
It's really special, you know. But when it comes down to it, you know, this is the same distance course that we have for training in Cork. Believe me, there's just a big grandstand and a fancy paint job. So there's no difference there. But you're right about the fans. All of the team tents are on the top of the boat shed down below the finish line. So when we were kind of getting ready to warm up and go out in the water, we kind of looked into the grandstand and I saw a whole load of green there. And then I was like, you know, there's some white supporters there as well, and a few of the Dutch crowd you could see standing there. When you're standing in front of them then on the podium, it turned out it was just the green, white and orange of Ireland. The place was absolutely packed with Irish supporters. Everyone else was drowned out. So really happy to see that great support from home.
To see everyone here as well, I think I probably said it earlier, but like, they've just been so supportive of us through our whole careers. And you know, not just people from the club, our friends, our family, everyone who's come out, like, we just can't thank them enough for everything.
And they could be accused of being greedy, because this is McCarthy's second gold medal at an Olympics. And O'Donovan has become the very first Irish athlete to win a medal at three Olympic Games.
Paul, I know you like to play it down, but this was no fluke. Your longevity in this sport, the titles, the medals, where does it come from?
I don't know. I think it probably just means I'm getting older, something more than anything else. I've been around too long. Fortunately, very lucky to still be healthy, fit and here competing, and lucky to have Fintan behind me in the boat, who was absolutely on fire this morning, dragging me down the course. So, it's been a good week.
Oh, he's getting the gold for understatement anyway. And after all of that, it's time to party.
French said they were going to take us out for some baguettes and wine downtown in Paris later on today. Two good lads, you know, they beat us in Lucerne last year. Disappointed they were not to make the final in their home crowd. But, you know, they were cheering us on this morning before we went out. And the whole lightweight field, you know, they're all very friendly lads. So hopefully we'll try and meet up with as many of them as we can later on, as well as a few of the Irish.
All the very best of competition. And all week long, the Olympics has just been fantastic. And while here on Team Playback, we have just focused on our medal winners. To all the Olympians who competed this week, wow, you're amazing. And we've got more next week. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Here's a bit of kneecap. Somehow a gentle fade on that feels all wrong. But that was fine art. And on Second Captains, they spoke to Mowgli Bapp, aka Nisha O'Carrollon, one third of the West Belfast Irish language rap group. The Mokini look like you've never heard it before.
I think Flann O'Brien, he talks about, like, back in the day, how the average Irish peasant has like 30,000 more words than the average English peasant. That's when he was going on, basically. And I think that's something that gives us a bit of creative fun in the Irish language, because you have like an Tishil Ginnijack and all these crazy declensions, and an Tishil Garmach as well, which is the evocative case, I think, in English that you don't have in English anymore. So we have all these like old school grammar styles that you wouldn't have in the English language that we can play about with, and you can use between the two languages, You know, we're spoiled for choice.
I did see a YouTube commenter saying, I don't understand a word they're saying, but I do understand this is an absolute banger. Which I guess is the kind of thing you want to hear as well.
Yeah. And he talked to Owen McDevitt and Kieran Murphy about being part of the first generation to grow up after the Good Friday Agreement.
Like, when we were growing up, for example, we would go to this place called the Lisburn Swimmers, which is just outside Belfast, Lisburn. It was like a city they created after Belfast was being overrun by Catholics. They created Lisburn. But Lisburn had the best sleds in all of Belfast. So as kids, we'd go there because it had really good sleds and had the donut and it had the blue sled and the yellow sled. But it was predominantly like known as a Protestant area. So then when we were going out there, our parents would like suggest to us that we take Protestant names because of like just the fear they had of going to these areas. Like, I don't think I'd be called Nigel, for example, and then the boy would be Willie and, wow, and all that stuff. Like, I don't think there was 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds having like, you know, tribal warfare going down the donut slide. But that's the thing about, I think, the generation before us is like, they just had, that's that trauma they carried, and they just fought constantly. You had to be on edge. So that's something that we have to like unlearn, I suppose, in a sense.
And he talked about their use of imagery around the Troubles.
This is just another one of them things for our generation to kind of deal with the generation before us and the politics that came before us. And we kind of use these in a manner that's a bit more lighthearted and just kind of make an art of it and making a joke out of it. And it's very hard to explain, but it's just something a way for us to kind of make light of the past. And I think it's a very hush-hush culture around things that happened in a lot of ways. So I think for us to talk about this stuff, people are quite open about it and quite nice.
When you use those evocative images of the balaclava and burning police cars, calling your band Kneecap, it can't shock you that not everybody is going to be nice about it, that not everybody is going to sort of understand the way you rationalise it there.
Yeah, well, I mean, the funny thing about Kneecap is people misinterpret what we're talking about. We're called Kneecap because people back in the day, and quite recently, probably still happens, and definitely does, would be kneecapped for antisocial behaviour or selling drugs or just taking part in that culture. Or if you're a menace, you would have been kneecapped. And it was mostly young people, like from 30 to 16, would have been kneecapped. And because of our subject matter is why we're called Kneecap, because it's an ironic name. The fact that we're in a different time now that we can talk about this stuff. And if we were doing this back in the day, we would have been kneecapped. But some people kind of misconstrue it and think that we're advocating for violence against the kneecap or people being shot.
But for a generation who might have lived through that violence, well, they're controversial.
Their memory of all this is obviously fresher. A lot of these people would have lived through it. Do you worry at all about hurting those people in any way by playing with the iconography in the way that you do?
Hurting them? I just don't think what we do, I don't think the art that we create is there to cause trauma in that sense, or to profit off their trauma. I think you have to look at, you know, are we profiting off the trauma of these people by kind of poking at their past? There are people in the north, like the biggest broadcaster up north, who would use, you know, just kind of poking at people's trauma as a means of conversation and just getting them riled up. I don't think necessarily what we do is to get people riled up so they'll buy our record or something. You know, we're not getting money nor people like talk about us on a radio show or something.
Well, that might not be strictly true though either, is it? You know,
well, I mean,
the controversy sells as well. It gets you more famous, more infamous, and ultimately,
the band does
become more famous, more successful out of that.
I don't think. I mean, if a painting of a police jeep, I don't know. I don't think that is the equivalent or the same as stoking other people's traumas or using that as a means of controversy. I don't think so. The last time I seen a burning police jeep was on the Shankill Road. So I think I think people on both sides of the community would agree there was no painted policemen were harmed in that mural. Have you?
Mowgli Bapp, also known as Nisha O'Carrollon, from Kneecap on Second Captains. On Sunday, the death of the great Edna O'Brien. The Clareborn author wrote over 20 books of fiction, as well as short stories, poetry, plays and non-fiction. And her frank depiction of sexuality in The Country Girls was scandalous at the time. The trilogy was banned. Some of the books were burned. Her career spanned over 60 years and she won many awards, including the Penn Nabokov Award for Achievement in International Literature in 2018 and the David Cohen Prize for Literature in 2019. And it was that prize that Sean Rocks on Arena asked Edna O'Brien about in December 2020 in an interview to celebrate her 90th birthday, and which was replayed this week.
That award that you won last year, the David Cohen Prize, the citation said, as I mentioned in my introduction, that you moved mountains both politically and lyrically. What type of mountains do you think you've been moving over the years? Did you feel that it was an apt description of what you've been doing with your writing?
Well, I felt it was very complimentary. I think it would be for others to say whether it was apt or not. I was very pleased about I was very pleased to get it. But I was also very pleased about the fact that my books are political. They don't seem so. But what I do, or aim to do, is to take a political situation and make it the backdrop to a human story. So a direct political book, like, say, Fritz Fanon, The Wretched of the Earth, that's purely political book, and it's a very good book and a very disturbing book. I'm still very interested, for some reason, in human beings, in how and what people do to each other or don't do, in how people behave in difficult situations, in crisis, and so on. And with both girls, which was about the Boko Haram capturing young schoolgirls and submitting them to every known kind of humiliation and trauma. So taking the human story and giving it its political dimension. But the political part is there. It is like the mountain. And the human story is sort of all along. I saw today that Etna erupted. I thought, yeah, that's what writing is. It's an eruption of a kind, which has to be, if it's going to be any good or last any length of time, has to have some beauty, the way music has beauty, has to have some, not some, but a lot of that, and of truth, and of human palpability, that the reader will feel. I want this as a writer, and I want it as a reader, that the reader will feel when reading the story, this is a story of real people.
From Arena. And Sinead O'Shea is making a documentary, Blue Road, the Edna O'Brien story. And she spent the last year working with the writer. And as she told Áine Kerr, O'Brien was utterly committed to her craft.
She lived in a country that at times misunderstood her and was incredibly critical of her. Where do you think she had landed out in terms of her own legacy, her own sense of self? Was that clear by the end of making this documentary?
Yeah, it's an interesting journey for her. I think she would say she made some misjudgments herself along the way. I think she feels she was very cruelly treated at times. I think overall, and it might sound a little trite, but she was so committed to writing, and I think that's something that's overlooked, you know, because there was just so much written and said about her, and, you know, the celebrity friends and the kind of glamorous lifestyle. You know, she wrote 34 novels and books of nonfiction and short stories. She was a complete workaholic. She wrote every day. All she wanted to do was write every day. To the very end, she wanted to write. She was still talking about writing. She was trying to finish a book. So I think possibly the truest thing you can say about her is that she loved writing more than anything.
Sinead O'Shea with Áine, remembering the great Edna O'Brien. On Liveline, hot on the heels of Winegate a few weeks ago, on Thursday, Bad Juju and the Scratch Cards. It's Mary's birthday at the weekend. A card landed on the mat. Hooray! A birthday card containing scratch cards and some Euro Millions lotto tickets. Ooh, you never know. However, the card wasn't addressed to her.
The problem is, if any of them come home, Mary, what would you do with the 8 million that you...
Well, you see, that's the predicament I'm in. Like, you know, it wasn't for me. And, like, I feel that the person that it was for, like, would be missing out.
Yeah.
And, like, I just wouldn't feel good because, like, I feel like, you know, it'll kind of bring you a bit of bad luck or whatever. You know, the kind of way. I just don't feel... I wouldn't feel good.
And the front of the card just says happy birthday.
Just happy birthday.
In usual typography. Any idea from the envelope where it might have been posted? Well, I presume it was an Irish stamp.
Is it an Irish era? Yeah, era. Ireland.
Ireland, okay. And there's no postmark on a Port Leash sorting office?
No, nothing like that. No, nothing at all.
It is a mystery.
No, it is a mystery.
So you want to return these to this... Is that a woman's name? That beginning
with F.
It's a lovely name, actually.
It is a nice name, actually. It could well be an Irish name, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But when I said it, I saw it this morning, I was all excited, of course, when I saw all this lottery tickets and the scratch cards, and I said, wow. And then that's not my name. I said, it's not for me. Like, you know. So then I just discussed with my husband. I said, I wouldn't feel good about this. Okay. I have to do something about it, you know.
Joe was giving clues.
In a cryptic crossword, the clue would be as follows. A faraway grandmother. Okay, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And whoever has that name will immediately recognise it.
Yeah.
And they hopefully will contact us. 0818.
A nation scratches its head. Nobody contacted the programme, which meant, by the end of the programme, Marie, conscience clearing.
I've consulted the Director General and I've consulted the Chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee and I've consulted every leader of every political party and they all agree, agree that you should be allowed to scratch the cards before treatment.
Okay.
On the clear understanding, Marie, that if a substantive amount is won and if people come forward tomorrow and they're verified, we may have to do something different. So will you scratch away, Marie, for me? How many scratch cards do you have?
There's six here in front of me.
Quick, get going.
Number one.
Three. You have to get three of any, isn't it? Quick. One done. Quick.
Five are on one.
Yes. 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 How many have you scratched now, Marie?
Let's see now here. Oh, I got three rings, €20.
Woo!
Okay, I'm going to the next three now.
Yes, quick. It's like river dance.
€20 and a fiver.
So you won 25.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Marie. Ill-gotten gains. Now, it's the bank holiday weekend. You might be hanging out with the family, meeting some friends, living your best life. Or you might be sitting there feeling just a little bit Billy No Mates. Because 20% of Irish people report feeling lonely, most or all of the time. But a man on a mission to change that is Roscommon barber and the county's age-friendly ambassador, Paddy Joe Burke.
You know, Anya, kindness has a long memory. And you know someone that was kind to you when you were young and kind to myself, I said to myself, you know now what I'll do? I'll get an apple tart and I'll call to them. I give myself a target of buy an apple tart once a week and call to someone that's no longer out in the community. Spend 20 minutes, a half an hour. Don't overstay your welcome. Nothing is better than someone that will call and won't go home. Half an hour is long enough with them. And the difference that can make, you know, to be with someone, and I do always say apple tart for the living and flowers for the dead, just to interact with a lot of these people. And the greatest way to defeat loneliness is to talk to one another. We went to the match now on Sunday, the All-Ireland, and we got on the train. And this man came in Longford and he sat in front of us and I said, good man, how are you? and we interacted. Well, what a conversation we had on you the whole way to Crow Park with him. Just, and hopefully, he was dying to talk, and he was full of knowledge. Now, I'd say what age bracket he'd be in, his mid to late 70s. But he, oh God, he was a lovely man, and the great stories. And we need more of that. All we have to do is to keep talking to one another. And when we are talking to one another, Anya, to be present to them, to really listen to what someone is saying. And we're all crying out to be heard. Everyone is talking, but there's nobody listening.
It's a lovely sentiment.
If we keep interacting and be present to whoever we're talking to, I think we can all help one another that way, Anya.
Yeah, it's the gift of time. And then, as you say, the small little gestures of an apple tart.
Just don't forget to go home. But if Paddy Joe Burke was talking about up for the match, we will have full trains from Kerry and Galway this Sunday. The women, the football final, and Kerry determined to win after leaving empty-handed for two successive summers. For Morning Ireland, Jackie Fox was in the kingdom and spoke to former player Kathleen Curran.
This is three now in a row now they've gone. They have to start. They seem to go out and the other team seems to just push their way through them, and then it's not till the second half that Kerry seem to get into the game. I'm confident that they'll do it. They have to win this one.
The pressure. But Galway, equally on the ball, and these fans are just gumming for the Brendan Martin Cup.
I think Galway came back great this year after not a great league, but their match against Dublin, they really, even when it wasn't going too well for them, they really like stuck it out. They got the win in the end, so that was like really inspirational to see their determination.
I can't wait to go to the final. Hopefully they'll bring it home, give us a bit of glory when the lads couldn't do it.
Oh, come on, the women. And with so much sport going on, well, settle in and get screaming at the telly.
For a moment there, it kind of felt like we had become a different country. In fact, yeah. our editor Brendan Fitzpatrick was saying that we've all turned into the audience on winning streak. But there is an element of that. Who else should we be watching out for later in the day?
Superfan Pam Coughlan, that's who.
Good morning, bonjour, Oliver.
Bonjour to you, bon matin.
Oh, this woman is great. She was supporting her granddaughter Aoife Coughlan representing Australia in the judo. She's 91. She's a bit of a hustler.
500,000 people have viewed this news already. The photograph of you online, you seem to have talked your way into, like, not the front row of the audience, you seem to be in an area where usually the coaches and the people with the Olympians would be. Explain if you will.
Explain how I got there. Well, I didn't do anything spectacular, actually. I just smiled at everyone. I'm a very friendly kind of a person, like, you know.
Yeah.
I just smiled because I was enjoying myself immensely. And all the security people and the volunteers were all very helpful. And when they saw me coming in, I suppose it was on account of my age. Like, I do look like 91, you know, like, for a moment to hobble along well, all right, but my smile is all right. So I just sat down in the seats that he had booked.
A smile
and
opens
rather
all doors.
Yeah, yeah, and there happened to be the barrier in front, and I was just in line with my vision, and one of the security crowds noticed that, and she came along and she said, would you like to move, she says, just down a little bit nearer the mat, like,
yeah,
you know. And I said, well, I don't want to go on the mat. I just want to stay on the seat. And she said, well, we'll just move you down there, she says, and you'll have a better view. And we were right in front of mat one, and that's where Aoife, my granddaughter,
Aoife Coughlan, in the judo.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the judo, and won her first fight, but then she was beaten in her second. Unfortunately.
And you're really proud of your granddaughter, aren't you, Aoife, who represented Australia?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I gave her our first cuddle when she was 4 months old in Australia.
Lovely.
And I'm cuddling her ever since. And I gave her several cuddles yesterday. I'm that kind of a person. I'm a cuddly person.
Yeah, we can hear. We can hear, exactly.
If I was beside you there this morning, Oliver, I'd give you a cuddle as well.
I could well believe it.
And she is rocking a look.
The red beret was very, very fetching. And big sunglasses indoors. I mean, this is how cool a granny you are.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing was, they had all those discos and strobe lighting and all, and it's all flashing, you know. So I decided I'd do a bit of incognito, like the people in Ireland might recognise me if you understand.
Oh, no, you look like a really rocking 60s spy.
And when she's not blowing up the internet at the Olympics, she's at home walking, playing bridge and table tennis.
Yeah, table tennis. Oh, that's a bit of a deal with the table
tennis. It's a fast game.
Yeah.
That's a fast game. You love it.
Well, no, it was at a slow pace, Oliver, you know.
I don't think the ping pong moves would feel that way. Can I ask you, Pam, because you have, look, you're at a beautiful age. How are you so happy?
Well, I have a very good sense of humour.
You
right?
Do?
I eat a very balanced diet and I keep very active. I walk every day and I'm able to drive still. And I have my driving licence still. And my eyesight's very good. And also the grey cells matter's very good. So, Jenny, the old knees are a bit wonky, all right. But other than that, I'm grand.
Should we have that in our 40s? You're incredible. I could talk to you all day.
You have to do is make your mind. Motivation is the word, and a sense of humour, and an odd glass of white wine.
Oh, lovely. The odd glass of white wine.
Maybe a glass of champagne just to celebrate, a special occasion.
I think every day is a special occasion.
All in moderation. Everything in moderation,
in your
all
life.
Of us.
Except moderation.
Moderation.
Yeah, very good. You got there, Henry. Never mind laughing, Harris. Your 90-year-old guest, 90-plus, Pam, has been the most fabulous, contagious laugh. My morning facial exercise has been released as this person. What an amazing granny. Inspiration. Infectious laugh from Aoife. Pam, people love you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I love everybody. I love meeting people. And I'm as happy as Harry. Not a bother of me, thank God.
Brilliant. We should make you our Olympics reporter at this point. Pam, you enjoy yourself. And the whole,
and
all of our...
thank you, and I will. Bye-bye.
Back to you. Bye-bye. Well, that was the best.
And that is it from this week's Playback. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week.